Compassion Plans, Episode 12, Easing Children's Pain, with David Rose of togiveasmile.org.
A mother just coming up and crying and, you know, wrapping her arms around and just saying thank you so much for what you do and helping my child be able to receive some medical care.
The world we live in is far from perfect. How can I effectively make a difference? This is Compassion Plans, a weekly interview to help you make the world a better place with your host, Bentley Davis.
Welcome to Compassion Plans. I'm Bentley Davis, and today I have David Rose from togiveasmile.org. Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks, Bentley.
I'd like to start off by talking about compassion, which is about reducing someone else's pain. So, David, what pain are you passionate about reducing?
You know, every year there's millions of children that are hospitalized around the world and a little over 11 million children that die from preventable diseases. And that equates to a little over about 30,000 children a day. And what we as an organization are all about is providing hope and encouragement to the children that are facing these difficult situations.
So yes, you're helping them through that situation. How does To Give a Smile do that?
So we as an organization have a twofold mission, and our mission is spreading hope, saving lives. And what we do in terms of our spreading hope is where we partner with area children's hospitals in our different locations. So we have an office here, a chapter here in Dallas-Fort Worth, and then also we have one in Dayton, Ohio. And we partner with children's hospitals to provide activities and events that bring hope and encouragement to children that are facing these illnesses, whether it be our mega toy drives that occur during the Christmas holidays, and we go room to room and actually deliver toys, or hosting like a craft hour event to dinners, you name it. Just anything that brings that smile to them. It kind of takes their mind off the current situation they're going through. And our saving lives is where we are, as an organization, host free medical clinics in foreign countries where that medical care is not necessarily within reach. So we partner with all different types of venues to be able to host these clinics in third world countries. We've been to Peru, we've been to Haiti, and we're about to just head to Africa here in about a month from now that we'll be heading to the Democratic Republic of Congo. And there's like an actual clinic that we'll be taking over for a couple days and providing free healthcare for children, helping to fight those statistics and to just be able to provide the antibiotics, immunizations, things that is not necessarily within reach like we have here in the United States.
So how long have y'all been doing this?
We've been doing this for about 8 years now. So yeah, impacted thousands of children both on our domestic and then on our global aspect as well.
Wow, that's amazing. How did you get inspired to start all this?
Definitely a good question. See, back in 2003, 2 months in my freshman year, I just moved down from Ohio to the state of Texas to Dallas-Fort Worth. And 2 months in my freshman year, I was involved in a pretty significant hit-and-run car accident. And as a result of that event, I spent the next about 5 years of my life in and out of hospitals, doctor's offices, and multiple surgeries to be able to get back to my current state of health. And as you kind of go through that type of thing, you know, it's obviously sometimes hard to keep your spirits lifted as you're faced with one, you know, one surgery, and then you find out you got to go through something else or go see another surgeon. In the midst of that, I was right at the age of 18. So a lot of times I would see some of my specialists in children's hospitals and see these children to kind of go through what I was going through. And right up front, I really had a choice to make. I mean, I had a choice to either hate the world due to someone's actions or find a way to love it. And it's really just kind of birthed in me is to start an organization that would uplift and encourage children and their families during these difficult times that they're going through. We got into place in about 2005, and then we've just continued to grow and reach and love on children. So
2005, you started it.
Yeah.
How long was that since the accident?
That was about 2 years after accident. So during that time, I was still kind of going through treatment. At that time, we just started like the paperwork of filing for the nonprofit. And then for the 2009 is when we became the 501c3 status.
So you're just like 20, 21 at that point, right?
Right.
How, as a young guy who's also going through all this stuff, how did you figure out it needs to be a nonprofit, and how did you kind of get started?
You know, really through the situation that I went through is having different types of nonprofits, obviously, that are so well known that really benefit, you know, children and so forth. I've always kind of had that passion inside of me about the nonprofit aspect. Never thought I would be the one to found a nonprofit on my end, but it's just where things have worked into its level to be able to go that route. And through connections that kind of walked me through, like professors in college that kind of talked me, like, you know, what things I would need to do, and referred me to the people that allowed us to, you know, to begin the process, I guess.
You were able to find mentors kind of throughout the process.
Exactly. That kind of helped us to get it off the ground and get started.
Would you have any tips of someone who's kind of thought about that they would want to start something like this on how to find people to help?
I would say, you know, first of all, do a lot of your research, you know, before looking into, you know, starting a nonprofit. Second of all, in terms of finding contacts, it would be, depending on what location you're in, there is like Center for Nonprofit. There's a website that has a full listing of all the nonprofits within the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and then maybe finding people to contact from there is what I would kind of suggest from there.
Cool. That's helpful. Since you've been kind of doing this, have you learned any lessons the hard way about starting a nonprofit?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's different things kind of looking back as to at first, obviously, that's what I said about research, just kind of diving a little bit more into knowing the whole process. I'm kind of the type that just get in and start making myself swim through it. I mean, we obviously, you know, completed everything we needed to complete, but just maybe doing a little bit more research in advance as to the process and how to file and what the typical time frame is. Because you have several years you have proceed to file through the IRS to obtain the 501c status. So they give you so much ramp up time.
Since you started doing this, can you tell us a story of when you really felt that you were really being effective in helping these children out?
Yeah, definitely. I'll tell you one on both aspects, you know, from our domestic and then also maybe one from our global standpoint as well. So I mean, really when I first had the vision of starting the organization was just more to have some, you know, local domestic outreaches. And I always wanted to do something around the holidays. You know, it's one thing hard enough to be sitting in a hospital on Christmas or any time around the Christmas holidays. So it was really kind of something that I wanted to give back during those holidays. Several years ago, we started what we call the Toy Drive. It's for a month of hope. We call it the month of hope for December. A lot of times here, depending on the locations, we actually host something in like an atrium or other locations. We can actually go room to room and hand deliver those toys. And I had the opportunity just to be up in Dayton, Ohio this past year for the December where our second chapter is, and to be able to just go room to room and be a part of the team to hand deliver that to the children. It just, you know, looking back from what I visioned and how I started it and the reason for kind of starting and then actually being able to see the children that are impacted. And we receive, you know, numerous amount of stories that come through that just through parents or through children that, you know, talk about what they've been through, and unfortunately some that don't make it, you know. So it's knowing that we're in there giving them that hope and encouragement and just taking their mind off the current situation they're going through. And from Peru, I mean, going to our global aspect, kind of talking a little bit about Peru, we started our first medical mission was in 2009. And ever since then, it's, you know, we've continued to go to different locations. But it really just hit home at that time is the fact that when we started on day one, and to know that when we arrived at the location that we were going to work and already see that there's lines is just like an overwhelming, you know, feeling, just knowing that we take for granted so much here, and to be able to see on like a third world country that they walk, you know, a long ways, you know, from the mountains they'd come in to, they take whatever form of transportation they could get when they heard about the clinics and so forth. So And we see that every year as we go back, just the lines that, you know, people come. And just most recently, last year, as just a mother just coming up and crying and, you know, wrapping her arms around and just saying, thank you so much for what you do and helping my child be able to receive some medical care. So it's those things that, those stories that really stand out and know that you're making a difference.
Now, this isn't your full-time job, so you have a full-time job.
That's correct, yeah.
About how much time do you spend, would you say, in a year or a week or a month on this?
I'm blessed to have, you know, an outstanding team that there's quite a few of us behind that all put in additional time to make the vehicle to Give a Smile continue to function and operate. But for me, as a role of the president and the founder of leading the team, it really just depends. I guess, you know, some weeks it can be 8 to 10 hours. I mean, it really depends on how busy the week is and what's on my plate. A lot of meetings and a lot of times just overseeing the team members that are currently helping to facilitate and carry out our mission of our organization.
And I imagine, of course, when you go on a trip or something, that's a week or
exactly.
two or
so,
time
yeah.
and a lot of planning right before and wrap up afterwards.
Yeah, so it really depends on the season too that right. we're in. So, you know, like if we have like big fundraisers, we have a big fundraisers coming up and, you know, things like that, that we all play a part and make sure. And that's kind of where it goes back to the seasons. When we're coming close to a trip, then it's a little bit sometimes more hours, and off season or times that we don't have as much going down, it's not too much going. So
why one chapter in Dayton? You're here in Dallas.
Well, I mean, I used to live in Ohio and just a lot of good friendships that are back in the Ohio area. Person that actually came on board to just help us with a lot of our creative design came on board as a board member over the organization. Him and his wife have led the Ohio chapter then for us for some time.
You mentioned you have 11 people working with
That's
you.
That's correct, yeah.
How'd you end up finding most of those people? Were most of those just friends or people that you knew and then kind of called them to? Or
it's been a little combination of both. Starting off was mainly friends and, you know, people that had like-minded and wanted to kind of make a difference in the world. And then ever since then, like from that initial standpoint, it's been a lot of people that have come to volunteer and really see the work of the organization and have come on with regard, all volunteer, but still like a staff standpoint that really helped to facilitate having various roles and functions. A lot of times when people come out, I've had people go on trips and come back changed and say, I'd like to be a little bit more involved in what you do. And that's where we kind of present. There's always a need within the organization of having, you know, some type of department or function that someone can oversee. So that kind of helps us. That's where a large majority of our current team members have been from those that have volunteered at either our domestic or our international locations.
How's the fundraising kind of work for your organization?
Yeah, so we have different types of events. We have one coming up, and that's like a Alley Cats in Arlington. And it's like a Half Price Tuesday, and it's just where families can come out and just enjoy a night, and then we get a certain percentage that comes back to us as an organization. We have a gala that is taking place in November. That is, this will be our first annual gala that we're doing here. And we've done all different types of things, from working air shows to different arts in the park type of teaming up with various cities and so forth to do things. So yeah, just continue to branch out and try new things and determine what works best for the organization.
Are there any tools, applications, or websites that you find very useful in managing, especially if you have kind of a distributed group? Or are y'all just mostly on email, or is there anything else you use?
Yeah, it's mainly through email and then through our internal website. Then we have a team member login that allows us to be able to keep certain documents or tracking of our calendars, et cetera, that we kind of utilize from a standpoint, from a team, to make sure that we all have the same correspondence and all on the same page with regard to different events.
Do you have challenges with overlapping other organizations? There's quite a few toy drives around Christmas and stuff like that. I don't have a feel for if that need is still very under met, or if there's if there's a challenge with coordinating with other groups that are out there? How's that kind of happen?
It's never really been an issue with To Give a Smile. I mean, a lot of times we're obviously working through the children's hospitals to register the event and make sure that on such and such day that we're the hosts for whatever type of thing, because they won't double book and have multiple people in. And a lot of times the same children may not be in the same hospital room, et cetera. So they don't, all the children's hospitals that we pretty much work with have, we have a designated night that is just To Give a Smile and coming in and doing those type of things. And all our outreach, as a matter of fact, for that is all geared on those type of functions. We work a lot even with nonprofits as well. We partner with nonprofits like Ronald McDonald. We do a lot of support through them, like meaning in terms of helping to facilitate activities there. So we partner together to kind of do things. Our mission meets that, you know, with regard to providing that that comfort and encouragement to the families that are staying at the home and are still going through medical related things at the moment.
So if someone wanted to come and support your organization, what would be the best way for them to do that?
With the organization, there's several different ways. I mean, there's a donate option on our website. If you're looking to donate, you can send us a check. It has all the information about check. And we also have an online giving application where you can go on and set up reoccurring or just a one-time donation to the organization. And then we, as an organization, always need volunteers to do what we do. They essentially become the hands that comfort, the voice that inspires and encourages these children. So they can actually go to our website as well. There's a portion that says newsletter, and you can get into our database. So they feed all the different opportunities from upcoming events to newsletters, et cetera. And also with our website, that new website we've recently launched, you can go to upcoming events and it'll list all the different upcoming outreaches that we have. And you click on sign up for whatever event you're wanting to be a part of. And that will, it will come up an email template and then just send over the information with regard to that event. So you already have the date and all this to everything in it. The only thing they have to do is just put their name and their email address, and then it comes to us and we it processes it accordingly. Yeah.
And your site looks wonderful. You just had a redesign.
We did. Yes, we did.
Looks fabulous.
Well, thank you.
I love the number. You say on the very on the front, if people go to togiveasmile.org, right now it's at 3,815 lives impacted and 50 outreach hosted and 1,540 have received medical treatment. So it's great to really see the impact of the time and the money and the love, really, is really kind of what that's a crude measurement of, isn't it?
Right, very much so.
So when you were getting this website done, how did you find the group that did it?
Well, we are definitely blessed on the team to have a board member that is a graphic designer and does a lot of the back ends of, or at least the design of the websites. And then he has an actual individual that used to work with him that actually does the back end aspect. So he's the one that has kind of helped us to put through. But yeah, that is how we have launched our most recent website.
And when you said, I'm just curious, when you said 11 people, does that include board members or do you have a separate board?
No, that includes the board too. Because some of them may have like a certain, not all of them, but some of them have like a joint effort depending on what type of role that they have. So, yeah.
And how did you go about kind of finding your board members? Is that once pretty much the same way as the other volunteers, just people you kind of knew? And
yeah, I guess for the board members, it's been more that people that I knew, especially with where we're going is, you know, having the right people in those type of positions. And not to say that any team members might slide into a board position at some time, but yeah, there's things that I look for to make sure that, you know, they're the right candidate for the position. So
yeah, board members are very important to an organization.
Right.
What do you kind of look for in a board member, or how do they really serve the organization?
Well, for what I look for kind of varies, but I mean, for the most part, depending on what type of person I'm kind of targeting, right? Overall, for the organization, I'm always what kind of work ethic, you know, do they have currently? Do they really have a heart to serve? Do they have a heart to make a difference in this world? I mean, that's huge as to any kind of nonprofit, right? That they're going to help to carry out the vision because they essentially are becoming the board that's going to lead that organization and aspect of what it can and cannot do. To maybe having a little bit of background, not necessarily how the organizations or organizations, nonprofits function, but having a little bit of a maybe business mind or even from a financial standpoint. But again, it all boils back to who I'm trying to target. If I'm trying to look for someone to bring the aspect of maybe the medical aspect, then I might be, you know, may not necessarily go down that. But yeah, there's different types of things that I'm always looking for in a board member. They're primarily just responsible for attending the board calls, and depending on how many we choose to have throughout the year. And that's in our bylaws. They're the governing body as to making the decisions as to where the funds that are coming into the organization, how they're going to be distributed to the various aspects and outreaches that we do, as long as it's obviously within our mission and kind of how we set the organization up.
And your next one coming up is in the Congo.
Yeah.
What kind of led you to choose Congo?
Now, on this particular one is our director of international missions is actually from the Democratic Republic of Congo, Africa. He's been with us for a couple of years now in his role and has been to different locations. And we're continuing to always look for new places to go to. And it's just kind of worked out that doors have kind of opened through this particular location that we're going to. But we have certain criteria that we as an organization are always looking at before taking a team. Obviously, we have to look at safety. We have to look at who's on the ground, because a lot of times we're partnering with someone on the ground that has a decent amount of connections, and there's just different things that we go through to make sure that as we send a team down that everything's going to be taken care of. And even from a food aspect for preparations and stuff, that we want to make sure that each and every team member that's going to have a good time, but at the same time be protected, and then having someone that is going to help facilitate that kind of process. Because a lot of times we are happy to take doctors and nurses with us, but also a lot of times when we're going to those locations, we hire in the doctors and nurses within the country we're going to as a translation. Yeah.
Translation and also understanding the resources and the culture.
Right.
I imagine there's a lot of challenges with just the cultural aspects. Because you said Peru, Congo, where else?
I've been to Haiti.
When you are kind of working on this, what do you kind of, just to give an idea of someone who might be wanting to found a similar organization, how do you spend most of your time? Is it mostly on paperwork, or is a lot of time prepping for the board meetings, or is it just all over the place?
It kind of is all over the place. And that's one thing I like about the nonprofit, you know, is the fact that every day is a different day, and you will learn that in any nonprofit that you are in. A lot of people that I've mentored, have been mentored by over the years, would say the exact same thing. And I mean, because one example, I may be sitting on a podcast and tell a little about who To Give a Smiles about, or, you know, that I may be helping to steer the with regard to the launch of a new website. Like, it may not be specifically me, but obviously just kind of helping to make sure that those that are working on that project have the resources they need in order to get that the job complete. Working with our volunteers, maybe speaking at different outlets, to hosting our events and or helping to plan for our upcoming fundraisers, et cetera. So every day is a different day. And yes, there is a decent amount of paperwork and things that we want to make sure that we complete on behalf of the organization and for the things that we got to report those into.
So what suggestion would you have for someone pursuing a compassionate life?
Yeah, and that's an excellent question, because I got to thinking about that as well. It's just, you know, for me is, you know, a lot of times we dream of these big ideas and things that we think we could go and make the world a little bit different. Or maybe it's whatever, fill in the blank, starting a new business. I really look to people and encourage them to take the first step. And instead of sitting on the sideline and dreaming and kind of thinking about doing something, make that initiative to start branching out. And maybe it's not necessarily starting it right away, but maybe the first step is just doing some research on whatever project. If it's starting a nonprofit or starting a business, that instead of just looking at it, begin to take that first step, putting your feet in the water, so to speak, and kind of take it and see where things kind of open up from there.
Well, David, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast and talking and telling us about To Give a Smile.
Well, thank you, Bentley. It's definitely a privilege and honor to be on the show.
And thank you so much for listening. Get the links and notes for today's show at compassionplans.com/12. Never miss an episode by entering your email into our subscription list while you're there. If you appreciate what we're doing, go to compassionplans.com/appreciate to find out how you can spread compassion, like rating and reviewing this podcast on iTunes. Thank you so much for caring.
That all sound okay?
Yeah, that was perfect.